and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors is pleased to support public radio in Central Illinois on behalf of its customers and business associates.
Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in this week for David Inge. We have to give him some time off every once in a while. At the controls, Jason Croft, and our producers are Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal. During this first hour of Focus, we will take your questions on home maintenance, something we do once a month, always on the third Monday of the month. Our guest, Hank Spies of the Spies Home Inspection Service here in Champaign. He has seen just about any situation you can imagine with regard to single-family houses, and is here to take your questions about anything. You might be having moisture issues right about now, or whatever other kinds of things about home repair, or just making things better around the house, projects you'd like to do. The idea of this show is to give you a chance to get some questions answered. All you have to do is call us around Champaign-Urbana, the number 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. And I will repeat those numbers every once in a while, and feel free to join us. Hank, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here.
Well, it's always good to come back.
Well, good. Actually, we do have a caller already.
Oh.
Shall we just dive in?
Hello. Go right in.
Okay. We have someone on line number 4 in Lafayette. Good morning.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Is just two very incidental questions. Is silicone oil conductive for electricity?
Haven't the slightest idea. Probably, but I don't know.
Okay. Thinking of it as greasing up the threads of light bulbs that are inclined to fuse and stick.
There are a number of products on the market for that, but I don't know that they're silicones.
Okay. The other is, I've wondered about a long time, is a thinner hose, garden hose, is it more forceful than a thicker one, a wider dimension?
No. Usually it's strictly a matter of the nozzle that's on it will control the force. Of course, the larger hose will carry more water, so you can probably get a little bit more out of that with the right nozzle.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks so much for the call. Our line's just filled up, so let's go on and talk with some more callers. Next up, someone in Champaign, line number 1. Good morning.
Good morning. I had a question about mold. We have a 2-story cedar-sided house, and last summer, for the first time, we had mold on the soffits on the second floor and on some of the siding on the second floor. And it's kind of confusing because, you know, this has not been the case before, and if anything, we have two fewer trees in the front yard than we had before. So, you know, there should be less shade than before. And I'm wondering if you could give us any clue as to why this would be happening.
Well, a lot depends on what direction the wind is coming from when it rains and getting it wet.
Oh, I see.
So you're right that, generally speaking, if it's in sunshine, it doesn't happen nearly as often. We usually have problems on the north side rather than the south side.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, if it gets wet up there, it's going to grow a little mildew. And generally speaking, about the only thing you can do is to wash it down with, one part of Clorox to 4 parts of water, and that should kill it off.
I see. Since it's not a whole lot of fun to climb around on up
very
there,
true.
would a pressure washer reach the second floor?
I would think so, depending upon the pressure washer, but I think mine does.
You know, I don't want one that's too powerful because I don't want to take the paint off.
Right.
I know the electric ones are less powerful than the gas, usually.
Usually that's true, but I get by with my electric one pretty nicely.
And so your electric one, but how would you, you'd have
you can get an extension wand that goes on it so you can, you know, a long pipe that goes up there so your nozzle is still fairly close.
Uh-huh. And so, and your source, you have some type of reservoir that you're, you know, putting the bleach solution in?
Yeah. Most of them have a way that you can add something to the water.
I see. Well, that sounds like a lot better than climbing around on a ladder. So
I agree.
Yeah, so there's no way to prevent this.
Not really. No.
Not really.
Remember, molds have been around for centuries.
Yes. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call and good luck. You got to be careful with those power washers, though. We rented one time, and boy, they can do some damage if you're not careful.
Yes, you've got to be careful as to how you use them. You don't want to aim them directly at you. You want it at an angle so it blasts stuff off and not blows, because it'll go right through wood.
It sure will. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, all right. Well, another caller waiting on line number two, someone in Rockville, Indiana. Good morning.
Hello?
Hello. Yes.
Hi. I just have a question about, I'm thinking about getting rid of my water softener and just getting some filtration systems on my thing instead on my water. Just wondered what you thought about water softeners versus filtration systems. I've got a well, and the water is a little bit sulfury smelling, and anyway, I'm going to hang up and listen. Thanks.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Well, they do, the filter and the softener do entirely different things. The softener is designed to take minerals out, which helps make the soap lather up better and things like that, whereas the filter won't really take minerals out. It will take out particulate matters. But so much depends upon what is in your well water. Some of the filters will take out some of the iron, but usually not much. Water softeners can create a problem in themselves in that we get a little more sodium in the water, and those people who are worried about sodium, there are special ones that use potassium, but not very many. They're not a very common type. The other thing is, what do you do with the backwash water when you backwash the water softener? Because that is heavy in salt, and if you run that into a septic tank, your septic field, if you've got in an area with a lot of clay, may block up and won't take it anymore. So we have to be a little bit careful about what we do with that. But, really, the filter and the softener are really two different animals and do different things to the water supply.
Would there be some place that would do testing on your water supply to
absolutely
recommend a better solution?
Yeah, there are a number of labs. I regularly use one in Peoria, but they're all over the country. And there'd be no problem in getting water tests to see whether it's a hardness problem or just exactly what the problem is.
So that might be a very good investment if you're dealing with
it. Well, might, yes.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Well, we'll go on next to a listener in Urbana, line number one. Good morning.
Hello. Mm-hmm. I have a question about windows. We're replacing the window sash cords, and I wondered, Hank, if there's a benefit to using the chain versus the cotton cord?
Not particularly. It might be a little bit more durable, but otherwise, no, not really. The other possibility is that you can get spring-loaded reels that go in the top, and you eliminate the cord completely, which means you can then insulate the weight boxes.
Okay, and so that would say that you couldn't insulate the weight boxes if you don't use those spring-loaded.
That's right.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Good. Thanks for the call. Let me just mention again that we're talking this morning with Hank Spies of the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's here to take your questions on home maintenance issues. We do have a couple callers waiting and plenty of time for others if you want to join us. 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Next up, someone in Savoy, line number two. Good morning.
Good morning. I am calling because occasionally I do some minor electrical work at the house and wasn't sure what I need a permit for in terms of putting an extra outlet somewhere where I need it in a wall. Is that something I should be seeking a permit on, or are there any general rules of thumbs?
Okay, if you are doing work on your own house, you don't need a permit.
Okay. And how about when I turn around and sell it and a housing inspector comes in?
Well, if you do it right, he won't say a thing.
All right.
But, you know, I would say it would be a good idea to get a permit if you were replacing the service entrance or something like that.
But okay.
Just adding an outlet or so, don't think anybody's going to require a permit.
Okay, and that's generally what I'm doing, and putting, like, lights and closets and some stuff like that.
Right. Now, please remember that you're not allowed to have a bare bulb light in the closet. It has to be a fluorescent or something that's enclosed.
In any form of a closet.
Right, because we all accumulate too much stuff, and much of it gets stacked on the closet shelf and then falls over against the bulb, and a lot of fires start that way.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. It is so true that we all accumulate too much stuff. Do you have any advice about how not to do that? Well, might be kind of a big challenge. Save that for another day. Let's go on and talk with someone in Champaign next, line number three. Good morning.
Well, that answered a question I really didn't have, but I'm glad to know that the reason you have fluorescent. We bought a house 4 years ago here, and there's fluorescent bulbs in the closets, and we never knew why, but now we know. So my question has to do with the stuff. We don't even know what it is, so that's what I need your help with. The stuff that goes in between the cracks with the on the concrete on the driveway, concrete driveway that's between between mm-hmm. the sidewalk and the driveway, but also mm-hmm. along the edges, like right by the garage, mm-hmm. because ours has kind of just sunk all the way down, and we're afraid that water is going to start to seep down in there and then cause us problems later.
Well, it probably will, and you can buy at any of the big box stores, Home Depot, Menards, et cetera.
What's it called?
Because
we don't know what to go ask for when we go in there.
Oh, probably just driveway filler. It comes in a gallon jug with a spout on it, and you can just pour it in.
Oh, really? Yeah. And then it just hardens?
Then it hardens, right.
Okay. So now the other question we had was, we've seen some ads for like rubber kind of, an upraised rubber thing that'll join up with your garage door mm-hmm. so that kind mm-hmm. of fills the gaps in. Are those generally good idea, or are they just, you
well,
know?
A rubber weather strip on the bottom of the door so that when it comes down, it will seal that so you don't get snow and water blowing
in. Yeah, we've got that, but unfortunately, we've gotten a couple of divots that have been formed into concrete, and so water comes in because the divot is lower than what the rubber actually meets. So we thought if we put an extra layer on top, that might help.
There is an outfit called Abitron that makes a concrete filler of this kind that you can trowel on and will harden up. And
Abitron,
A-B-A-T-R-O-N. It's out of Wisconsin.
T-R-O-N, okay.
You will find their ads in magazines like the Old House Journal. And this kind of thing.
Okay, and do you think that's generally available anywhere we would go, a hardware store?
I don't know what that brand is, but usually it's an epoxy-type material that you trawl in and sets up.
Okay.
And you can use to fill, but it has to be a very good one in that it's thin enough that if it isn't, it will crack.
It's not so much a crack. It's more just like a indentation.
But the edges, when you fill it up, then the edges crack off.
Okay.
On the filler. As I say, their particular one is called Abocrete, and I don't know if it's readily available, but certainly I order from them all the time.
Okay, and then otherwise it's just the other stuff is just concrete filler?
Yeah, basically we're looking for an epoxy because anything other than an epoxy is not going to hold up.
See, what we've looked at, it looks like almost looks like rubber strip. Kind of a rubberized strip? Is that basically what we're looking for as well?
I wouldn't think so, no.
Okay.
I would be looking for essentially a filler that basically sets up and looks like concrete.
Okay, and so then that'll have the best protection available.
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Thanks for your help.
Okay, good luck.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call. A couple of the calls waiting. We'll go next to a listener in Paxton on line number one. Good morning.
Yes, I have a call about a water heater. We've got a propane water heater, and we're thinking about getting a new one. What about tankless water heaters?
Well, a lot depends on how you use your hot water, and you have to size them carefully so that you will heat enough.
Right, I understand that. Are the tankless ones much more efficient than a standard one or not?
Not particularly, in that the new tank-type water heaters have so much better insulation than they used to have that if you have a pilot light, it will more than make up for the loss from the tank. Now, you have to get it in order to really save energy, you have to get a tankless that does not have a pilot light that would have electric ignition. You may save some that way if you don't use much hot water. Otherwise, with the modern insulation on the tank type, the pilot light itself will more than compensate for the loss of the tank.
Okay. Well, I'd heard a lot about tankless and didn't know what the,
They take a lot less space. If you get one, be sure you get a readily available brand. Our real problem with those when they first came out in the market about 20 years ago was the fact that they were all foreign-made and you couldn't get parts for them.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks for the call. Sounds like a tankless task. Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Well, there's a reason they don't let me fill in that often on the show. Okay. We'll go next to another Champaign-Urbana listener, line number two. Good morning.
Hi. House guide says occasionally flush out the water in the hot water tank, but this one is gas heated. Mm-hmm. Has looks like a dial near the bottom, but we can't find a faucet-type outlet of any kind.
Well, usually there is a valve and a hose connection right at the bottom of the tank.
And it looks like a faucet?
Yes, yes.
And you just turn the knob and you can get hot water to use right there in the basement?
Well, no, because you're getting it off the bottom. It's likely to be colder water. It won't be nearly as hot.
Uh-huh. But it should be, like, that should be opened every so often?
Okay, are you in Champaign-Urbana?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wouldn't bother. The water here does not really do that much. If you get crud coming in with it, it settles in the bottom of the tank, and that's what they're trying to flush out.
Oh, so here the water's pretty good. You don't have to do that.
Champaign-Urbana, I've never flushed mine, and I've never had any problem with it.
Uh-huh, okay.
Okay, thanks for the call. Thanks. In other places, you want to flush it out because...
Yeah, because it depends on how good a filter system they have. Yeah. We do get a little bit of sand occasionally coming in with it because the final filter at the water company is a sand filter. We get a little bit of sand. But generally speaking, the water in Champaign-Urbana is very kind to water heaters.
Mm-hmm.
I find them regularly that are more than 20 years old. Whereas until they put in the new system in Mahomet, if you got 5 years, you were doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm. It would just sediment up?
Yes, and the water was not treated the same way. Mm-hmm. They have now put in a municipal system, but that's pretty good, but that didn't used to be the case. So much depends upon the quality of the water. And we've run into the only time you can tell if you're running into a problem like that, when the water heater is running, if you hear it kind of thumping or percolating,
mm-hmm.
then you know you've got enough crud in the bottom that you'd better get the thing washed out or replace it.
Okay. Well, our lines are full, so let's go on and talk with some more listeners. Next up, someone in Champaign, line number three. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Mm-hmm. We're first-time homeowners. We just bought a house in Champaign. It is a 1950 ranch house. And we are totally overwhelmed with all of the things that we have to learn how to do in order to maintain this house and property. And so I'm looking for guidance. our home inspector was not very helpful, and I tend to learn better from people than from books.
Okay. Well, I don't know what I can offer you. The university has a publication called Maintaining the Home that is published by the Building Research Council here at the university. And it gives you a sort of a listing but not detailed instructions as to how to do the maintenance. But it gives you an idea of what may need to be done. There are people who can come out and explain things to you. I'm sorry your home inspector didn't, but there's a considerable difference among home inspectors.
And you can also call this show every month.
Yeah. Call us and ask us with your questions.
Okay.
Is there anything in particular that you know, maybe rises to the top in priorities of, you know, this new home?
No.
Okay.
Okay. One of the things you want to be sure and do is check the air filter on your air conditioner so that we're getting enough airflow through the system to do a good job of cooling. And generally speaking, with heating and cooling systems, you're probably going to need to change or clean the filter, depending on the kind, at least every 3 months.
Okay.
Now, you can do a quick check on that, see if your air conditioner is working properly. You stick a thermometer in the return air, leave it there for a few minutes, see what temperature is being pulled into the system, then transfer the thermometer to the outlet nearest the cooling system, and it should be running about 8 to 12 degrees cooler. In other words, you should be getting an 8 to 12 degrees cooling through the system. If you are getting more than that, your filter is probably blocked.
Okay. Well, that's one place to start.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Good. All right. Okay. Good luck. Several callers waiting. We'll go next to an Urbana listener. Line number one. Good morning. Hello? Is there a caller there? Okay. Oh, I think we lost that person. We'll then go on to a Champagne caller. Line number four. Good morning.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I was calling about, actually, I just have a little 780-foot square foot condo, and I was thinking of having a little fun and trying to install carpet. I had some huge remnants, and I just have a couple small bedrooms and a little living room, like 12 by 13, not too big. And I was just curious to see if you think that is a really bad idea, and in which case I thought maybe I could just hire somebody to come out with a carpet puller and that sort of thing.
Unless you have some experience installing a carpet, really isn't a do-it-yourself project.
Yeah, okay. Maybe I
because
should
you do need
some.
You do need somebody with a carpet kicker and the experience in fastening things down. You can put it down with double-sided tape, and if you can get it to lay flat, that will probably do the job.
Oh, really? I didn't think about that.
They make a double-sided carpet tape specifically for attaching. If you do a good job of cutting, and you can get it stretched reasonably tight, double-sided tape will usually take care of it.
Well, that's interesting because I do have it's actually concrete underneath it because I pulled up the old carpet already and there was just a pad down and it's concrete underneath the pad. But I'm trying to envision how to get. I mean, the carpet's obviously going to be on top of the pad, so would I put tape on the pad?
You'd have to trim the edge of the pad back far enough to get the tape on the concrete.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Basically, just putting double-sided tape on the edges and then pulling it as tight as I can.
Right.
And leave it at that. I mean, there's tack strips in there right now that maybe I want to pull those up then if I want to do
well,
it that
you,
way.
Well, you might. Otherwise, you can try and stretch it, or you can rent what is called a knee kicker for stretching the carpet. You fasten the carpet down on one edge, and you use this to stretch it and then push it down on the points of the tack strip.
Hey, okay. I guess maybe I could run it too. Well, and do they usually you try to cut it exactly to fit, or you think a lot of times they'll cut it maybe a little long and then, like you said, use this knee kicker to stretch it and then trim it off at the end?
Yeah, you can do that. It all depends on how much, lots depends on the carpet as to how much it will stretch.
Yeah, okay. I guess it's going to vary, so I'll have to try that. Yeah. Well, no, thanks for that suggestion. I didn't think about the tape, so that's a good idea. I might try that too.
Okay.
All right, appreciate it.
Great. Good luck.
All right.
We will go next to line number three, the caller we lost a minute ago. Throw them a lifeline, and hello.
Howdy. I've got a 100-year-old boiler that was converted from coal to oil to gas.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been in the house just over 20 years. A bolt came out of it 10 or 15 years ago, and they put in some hydraulic cement, and that sealed a little hole where the bolt came out, and that's been fine. But this last year, I got a little pinhole leak in one of the radiator returns, and that, of course, dried out the furnace, and it just stayed on, and it created a couple of little microscopic cracks. You can't actually see where the water is coming out, but you can see that it gets damp, and I'm going to probably try to put some of that hydraulic concrete on that, but I was wondering if there's anything you can put inside the furnace that would plug those little holes from the inside.
Well, if you have a boiler that's that old, the only thing you can afford to do with it is throw it away.
How am I going to get it out of the house?
Torch if necessary.
Who do I hire to do that?
Any of the heating men that will put in a new one.
They all know how to do that, huh?
Yes.
What cost are we looking at?
Oh, probably $2,500 to $3,000, depending upon the situation.
To have them cut up the old one?
No, I mean to put in a new one.
Oh, that's going to include the cost of cutting up the old one?
Yeah.
Oh, well, boy, they were telling me a lot higher than that. Can you recommend anybody?
Not on the air.
Where can I find you off the air?
356-5048.
And your name is?
I'm Hank Spees at Spees Home Inspection Service.
356 5408?
5048.
5048, and you're Hank.
I'm Hank.
All right. Hey, I appreciate it very much.
Basically, a boiler like you're talking about, even with its conversion, is at best about 40% efficient. At today's fuel prices, we just can't afford that.
So I should replace it anyway.
You should replace it anyway. I replaced mine with a 90% boiler, and it cut my fuel bill tremendously.
All right. I will give you a buzz.
Okay.
356-5048.
Right.
And that's for Hank.
Yes.
Thanks again.
Okay.
Okay.
Good luck. We are just about at our midpoint, actually just past our midpoint, with Hank Spies of the Spies Home Inspection Service, taking your questions on home maintenance issues, all kinds of subjects we can tackle. And all you have to do is give us a call, 333-9455, around Champaign-Urbana. Anywhere else, 800-222-9455. Next up, someone in Iroquois County, line number one. Good morning.
Good morning. I would like to know if Hank could give us a little advice. We have a two-story white wood house. It's probably 85 or more years old. It's been well-maintained, and the wood has been scraped and primed and painted about every 6 or 7 years. Problem is, we are now in our 70s, no longer able to climb ladders, and sometimes we think about replacing our original wood siding with vinyl, but we hate to destroy this original wood. Can you tell me, is it a better value to keep the original wood and continue to, well, we could hire it done, or is it better to hire it to be have vinyl put on?
In the long run, you're probably better off going with vinyl or steel or aluminum.
Mm-hmm. Which of those products would be the best that you think?
Well, probably steel's a little more expensive. I like it better than vinyl because vinyl expands and contracts a lot with changes in temperature.
Okay. So steel is the recommended replacement for wood then?
Well, it certainly is one of the things you consider. We also have some other products on the market, some newer ones, the fiber cement siding, which would involve taking the old siding off. Either the vinyl or steel would probably go on over the existing siding without any problem.
Okay. But now this new product, this
fiber cement.
Fiber cement.
Right.
Does that look like the original wood?
Yes, it will look very much like the original wood.
It's a narrow wood.
Well, you can get it any width you want.
Oh, okay. And is it more expensive than either vinyl or steel?
Probably.
Okay.
Probably, but it also has the color molded in.
Oh, it never has to be painted?
It should never have to be painted.
Okay. Wouldn't that be nice?
Wouldn't that? Yes. Well, what about around the windows? We have dormer windows.
Right. Well, no matter which one you use, you're going to have somebody apply it who knows how to put the flashing in around windows.
Mm-hmm.
Even on brand-new houses, our biggest problem is window leakage because most of the people who are putting on siding these days do not know how to properly flash a window.
That's discouraging.
Well, it's discouraging to me, too, because I see it every day. But, yes, that is one of the problems. There is some specific flashings. There's a new ASTM standard as to how to do it. It's just that I can't get anybody to do it that way.
Okay. So if we should, well, I'd probably have to ask you this offline.
Well, basically what you have to do is insist that the applicator apply the siding according to the manufacturer's directions. And that usually will take care of it.
Uh-huh. Let's see, one more question. If we were not able to find anyone that would do that fiber cement in Iroquois County or nearby, do you...
Well, certainly there's nothing wrong with vinyl siding. We've got vinyl siding here in town that's been on for 30 years and still looks good. Mm-hmm. Again, it's a matter of the skill and care with which it is installed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And let me think now. The fiber, what do you call it?
Fiber cement.
Cement would probably be the least maintenance.
It would be low maintenance. As I said, the color is molded into the stuff, so...
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be a very durable material. It's only been used in this country about 10 or 15 years. Mm-hmm. It was developed in Australia.
Mm-hmm. We like white so much. That's what our house is.
Yeah, well, I don't have any problem with that.
Okay. And steel would be like number two for your choice.
Well, in terms of durability, it doesn't dent from hailstorms like aluminum does.
Mm-hmm.
And it withstands, it may dent a little bit, but it doesn't crack, which vinyl siding sometimes
mm-hmm.
does.
Okay.
And vinyl also expands and contracts more with changes in temperature.
Yeah, so that's why you see those seams on some homes. So
yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. And then last of all would be the aluminum, is that right?
There's nothing wrong with aluminum, but as I say, if you have a hailstorm, it's going to dent like heck.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and may I call you
sure.
offline to get...
Sure.
All right, and you, that number again was what?
356-5048.
356-5048. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Good luck. All right, well, we have lines are pretty much full. We'll go next to a listener in Bloomington, Illinois, line number two. Good morning.
Yes, hi. Mm-hmm. This regards painting interior trim. It's... raw trim, and I trying to replicate what I see in new homes at high gloss finish, and I thought using oil-based primer would do the trick. I used a fast dry oil primer, and it dried so fast that I had brush marks everywhere, or lap marks, whatever it's called, and
yeah.
And that's even after just a few seconds, it would seem to leave the yeah. brush marks. After it dried, I sanded and tried to get some of that out and finished with a latex, but I still can see the brush marks. How do they get that high-gloss, ultra-smooth finish?
Well, basically, you would probably use a latex primer and then go back over it with oil. You can go over... latex with oil, just not oil over latex.
Oh, okay. So say that again. I would
get a latex primer down there, and then on interiors you can use an oil-based gloss finish,
okay.
But they have some good glosses that are oil water-based as well.
Is that what they use in new construction then?
Very often, yes. Very few people are using oil-based anymore because of the volatile organic compounds that are given off as it dries.
But oil as a top coat on trim is more durable, isn't it? Or is that a,
not necessarily.
Not necessarily. I always, maybe that's the old myth.
The water-based paints have changed significantly in the last 10 or 15 years, and they're doing quite well.
With oil, you need a certain brush. You need a bristle or...
Yes, you're going to need that, and it tends to watermark or brush mark a little bit more than the latex base do.
Oh, okay. Thanks very much.
Okay, yeah. Thanks a lot, and good luck. Next up, an Urbana listener, line number three. Good morning.
Yeah, hi, good morning. We're back to the cedar shakes. I guess they're technically called shingles. We live mm-hmm. in a little bungalow. It's about 80 years old, and it's time to stain those shakes. But we understand you're supposed to clean the shakes first, and we're wondering, we're fearful that a water pressure cleaner...
do not use a high pressure water on cedar shakes. It will.
Yeah,
it will
so okay.
Them.
That's the real question then. So I understand if on the moldy parts, one part Clorox to four parts water.
Yeah.
Is there any other solution that should be used for the rest of the house or just
no,
water?
Not particularly. Just get on there with a brush. You know, these long-handled car wash brushes would do a pretty good job usually.
Okay. And then start from the top, go down?
Right.
Okay. And one other question about this little house. We had a new roof put on a few years ago, and the nails pounded through the overhang. Is that what's called a soffit?
Mm-hmm.
And so that trim under there needs to be painted. Is there any suggested way to work around these nails, the points of the nails when we're scraping? That's just a mess.
Yes.
Okay.
You had a roofer that didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah. Okay, so brush. Would water pressure help on that at all, or is that just bad news to even think of squirting high-pressure water up there? You're going to put more water in than get anything off.
I would be, you've got to be very careful with it if you use a high-pressure washer because we definitely don't want to blow any water into there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Is that air pressure? Does that help at all?
No.
Okay.
No.
Just got to get up there with a wire brush maybe with real long bristles?
Probably would be the best solution.
Okay.
And cut off the points of the nails if they're sticking out that far.
That'd be good.
Really? Okay, that's not going to have the shingles come loose if you cut off those tips?
No, not at all.
And how do you cut them?
Side cutters or pinchers.
Okay. So it's called pinchers if I go to the hardware store?
Yeah.
I have a couple pair of them, but I'm not sure what to call them. And
okay.
But I can, it's printable.
They're sort of like pliers with cutting edges on them. Is that what they are?
The side cutters will probably do it good. And there's also an end cutter.
Yeah.
Okay, so side, S-I-D-E?
Right.
Cutter or end cutter. Okay, thank you very much.
Good luck. Scraping paint, not the most fun.
No.
But you got to do it. So, all right. Well, our lines are continuing to fill up. We'll go next to a Danville listener, line number 4. Good morning.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious. I replaced a 90% efficiency 20-year-old furnace last fall with a new 90-plus. And I'm just wondering what that old furnace efficiency was by the time it was replaced.
Well, a lot depends. Probably it was not down very much.
Ah.
But there could be a number of reasons for replacing them. But generally speaking, if you're working on a 90 or so, they hold their efficiency pretty well.
I see. Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay. Thanks for the call. We'll go next to a listener in Champaign, line number 1. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Hello?
Yes,
oh, okay.
We got you.
Good morning. I have a question about vents on crawl spaces mm-hmm. on the outside of the foundation.
Right.
And it does appear that they can be opened from the outside, but I can't get them, so I assume they're probably corroded or...
Probably true.
Is there a product that I can kind of spritz around the screw and the cuff?
Well, you can try a little WD-40 or something like that, and that may get them, and it may take a hammer to persuade it a little bit.
The way they look, there is a screw in the center and kind of a rectangular piece mm-hmm. with a sort of cuff. Is it the screw head that has to move, or can you move the whole cuff?
I think you move the whole thing.
Move the whole thing.
Yeah.
And how much do they open, then? Do they just sort of, like, you know?
They'll just slide. This has a grill on it, and it will slide
right.
off the openings. Now, you want to be sure that those are closed in the wintertime.
Right.
And if their crawl space is dry, leave them closed all year.
Okay. But I don't think my crawl space is terribly dry, so I should be opening them.
Okay. If your crawl space is not dry, do something about getting it dry.
Okay, the Visqueen.
The Visqueen, absolutely.
Okay.
It may sound ridiculous, but lack of a ground cover in a crawl space can shorten the life of the shingles by 5 years.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot. That's because the water from the ground just goes right into the house.
It goes into the house, and it condenses on the coldest available spot, and usually that's the bottom of the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, you can shorten the life of the shingles 5 years by having a damn crawl space.
Well, very good. We'll go on next to an Urbana listener, line number 2. Good morning.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have a question, actually, about a particular house that Hank's son came and did the inspection on. And he advised us with the chimney, that's a cinder block chimney, it is starting to, the mortar is crumbled. Mm-hmm. He suggested that we consider replacing the furnace and the water heater with side venting them out the basement, and then capping the chimney off at the attic.
Right.
My question is for Hank is that can we do that one piece at a time, like replace the furnace, have that vented out the side, then replace the water heater, have that vented out the side of the basement, and eventually get around to the chimney, or do we have to do it all in one?
Well, if you're going to replace the furnace and the water heater, do them both at the same time.
Okay.
Now, as far as knocking the chimney off and doing it in the attic and closing up over the roof, no, you don't have to do that in a hurry. But if you leave just a water heater vented into a chimney, there will be considerable condensation and it will cause more problems.
So okay. Great.
We don't want to leave the so-called orphaned water heater.
Okay. Now, have I used all the right language when I go to talk to people to find the right estimates for cost, saying side venting? Is there some other language?
I'll just go at a direct vent furnace or direct vent water heater.
Direct vent furnace or water heater. Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. And those are extremely efficient, more so than...
Yes, we're looking up at 90% efficiencies on those. So,
right.
That helps, too.
Right. Always good to know that you're saving energy dollars. All right. Well, we have just about 10 or 12 minutes left with Hank Spies of the Spies Home Inspection Service. We have several callers waiting and time for others. If you want to join us, your questions on home maintenance are welcome. 333-9455. Toll-free 800-222-9455. And I believe someone in Charleston is next on line number three. Good morning.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question about crawl space also. I have a large room that was turned into a room. The top of the room was insulated and it sheetrocked. The bottom of the room still has cinder blocks. I'm trying to reduce the humidity. I run a humidifier in there and it still will stay about 70%.
Dehumidifier, I hope, not humidifier.
Dehumidifier.
Right.
And somebody suggested that I put some type of insulation around the cinder blocks. I'm wondering if that's the best solution.
Well, I would probably give the cinder blocks a coating of the waterproofing paint of the kind. There are several brands on the market that are designed to be painted on that, and that may help. Otherwise, then you can add a couple of inches of the closed cell styrofoam. It will be either pink or blue or something like this, not the white. And you can add some insulation there, and that will help. But basically, I would probably put on a coat of the waterproofing paint first.
Okay, I don't get any water coming in.
It's still coming through and evaporating. That's why your humidity is high.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call. We'll go next to a listener in Palestine, Illinois, line number four. Good morning.
Morning.
Mm-hmm.
Hank, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
I have an old heat pump. It's about 28 years old, and the venting for it is in where a window goes. It's an old style, and I didn't know if efficiency is bad on those, and I didn't know about geothermal if I replaced it.
Well, the initial cost of geothermal is so high that I don't know what it would pay you to replace it or not. You'd have to get bids on it, but I have a feeling that your jaw may drop when you get the bid. however, a heat pump that's that old, the efficiency, just because of wear, may be down considerably. Otherwise, I don't have any problems with them at all.
Okay, so efficiency might be down.
The efficiency might be down. I mean, we've got a compressor in there, and if you run a compressor for 20-odd years, its efficiency is going to drop off.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Next up, a listener in Champaign, line number one. Good morning.
Hello.
Yes.
I got a couple of questions. One is the ground fault interrupter.
Yes.
That was installed in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And during thunderstorms, it trips. We have ground fault interrupters in the kitchen, and they don't do that. And I was wondering if that was a faulty ground fault interrupter.
Probably is.
It clicked last night, and it didn't. I don't think it thundered any. Somebody was telling me that if the fluctuation of the electricity is such that if it's too sensitive.
Well, it could be. You can try replacing it. It may be possible that there is something that is shorting in the electrical system, but I doubt it. I'd try replacing the ground fault interrupter.
Okay. And the other question is, I had a plumber come out and install the single faucet and the faucet for the new tub.
Yes.
Bathroom. And they just put it on. They didn't put any caulk or anything behind it. Are they supposed to do that?
Well, generally,
I'm worried about the water from the shower coming down on the
well, I would certainly agree with. I presume there's an escutcheon plate around it somehow.
Yeah, there is.
Okay, and they should have set that in plumber's putty.
Well,
there's a product called plumber's putty, and you get that in, and you set that in, and that will be watertight.
Okay, but if I just took it off, and put in the silicone, would that work?
Yes, it would.
But I thought they would do it. And one final thing, my wife is worried about our basement. There's a tiny fine little hairline cracks, but I did that test with the aluminum foil taped on there and left it, and there's nothing, there's no...
Okay.
It's dry, basically.
Tell her to sleep well. It's just nothing but a shrinkage crack.
Okay, because we have a tree that's about 10 feet away, and it's big.
No, I would strongly figure what you have is shrinkage cracks. I mean, after all, we're pouring concrete in there as a liquid, and as it dries, it shrinks a little bit.
Yeah. And, but there was some water forming in the corner, but there's no cracks. And it, I took off the paneling and stuff, and there was little water stains that started halfway down the basement and kind of collected in.
Okay, in that corner, do you have a downspout?
Yeah.
Okay, extend the downspout so that the discharge is at least 5 feet away from the foundation.
Okay, so it's just kind of getting through the concrete?
Right.
You suggested to that other guy about that waterproofing paint. Should I use it for that too?
Well, you could, but probably getting the downspout further away will take care of it.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks very much for the call. We have a couple other callers waiting and probably time for others. We've got about maybe 6 minutes left during this hour of Focus 580. We'll go on next to someone on the campus here, line number two. Good morning.
Hi. I have a flat garage roof. It's got a very slight slope on it. And when I moved into the house about 5 years ago, it was leaking. And a couple of years ago, I had that roof replaced, and it's still leaking. So the problem appears to be coming off the main roof onto there. If I'm going to probably sometime in the next year replace the main roof,
mm-hmm.
is there anything I can ask them to do special to make sure that that
They're just going to have to reflash that joint between the main roof and the garage roof.
That's all it needs. You don't, putting in a gable or extending the eave over or anything like that is not necessary?
Certainly that would be desirable, but I don't think it should be necessary.
Okay. So just a better flashing job will
right.
do it. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call. You know, I got a question. Well, actually, I think I'll save my question because we have a caller who's been waiting patiently, and then if there's time, I'll get to mine. And by the way, we have about 5 minutes left if someone else wants to join us. 333-9455 is the Champaign-Urbana number. Toll-free 800-222-9455 elsewhere. Someone in Roanoke, line number three. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a house that we just resided here about a year ago and put vinyl siding on. It did have aluminum on before. We took that off and put this vinyl siding. It's 2.5-inch ribs. I think there's three on a sheet. And after we get it on, we noticed a little waviness in it, and it looks really bad. Just like each sheet, some of them are better than others, but it's like the top sheet is in further than the other, and it makes it appear like there's a wave in the siding going up. We're not real sure what's going on. They put a fanfold insulation, a foam insulation on. Do you have any ideas on that?
Basically, I would say they drove the nails too tight.
Really?
Your vinyl siding has slotted holes, and you need to drive the nail such that it will not vibrate in the wind but can move lengthwise. Because
right.
what you are getting, as it warmed up, the length of the stuff expands and it will buckle.
Okay. Is there any way they can fix that? Do you have any ideas?
Not easily. I mean, basically, you're going to have to pull the stuff off and get the nails loosened up enough so the siding can move horizontally. You should be able to grab a piece of the siding and slide it sideways maybe an eighth of an inch. And if it's nailed too tight to do that, then it's going to buckle.
What appeared like when we had the sheeting, when they were putting it on, it appeared like the top bar looked like it was a little bit different angle than the two bottom ones on a sheet.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a possibility that the sheet could be a bad sheet or?
Probably not. I still think it's a matter, applying vinyl siding takes a pretty delicate touch as to how far you drive the nails.
Okay.
Because it has to be allowed to move, because it's going to move one way or another, whether it buckles or whatever, but it's going to move. Can't
okay.
fool Mother Nature.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Good luck. We have someone in Knox, Indiana next, line number four. Good morning.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling about mold in the attic.
Okay. Your house on a basement or a crawl space?
Pardon?
Is your house on a basement or a crawl space?
No, it's a crawl space.
Okay. And do you have a plastic cover down over all the dirt in the crawl space?
Yes.
Okay. How damp is it down there? Usually mold in the attic starts in the crawl space.
Well, it's not really damp in the crawl space.
Okay. Do you have any problems with condensation on windows?
No.
Okay. In that case, you may need some additional attic ventilation.
How much do you need?
You're supposed to have about 1 square foot for every 150 square feet of ceiling.
How about what would it cost to have, got to have it removed? What, do you have any idea what it should cost?
To have, what are you removing now? We're talking about, you're talking about mold in the attic. Are you talking about the bottom of the roof sheathing or where?
Yeah, the on the sheathing on the roof.
Yeah. Okay. That would be very expensive. We're looking probably at, $6 or $7 per square foot of roof to tear it off and do it. And it could mold again as long as the moisture is getting there. You're sure?
In other words, it should have more ventilation.
It should have more ventilation. Are you sure that you don't have a clothes dryer venting in there someplace?
You say $6 or $7 a square foot.
Yes.
How about the primer, alcoholic base? How that put on?
It won't stop the mold.
It won't?
No.
Okay, then. Thank you.
Okay. Sounds like a tough problem. Well, we're about at the point we're going to have to stop. I'm sorry to say that we've had several callers left waiting this time, but I can promise that we will do the show again, always on the third Monday of the month.
Your man can take their phone numbers. I'll get them later.
Okay. Well, that's very kind. So if people will hang on, then Jason can pick up the phone and Hank will follow up. Very gracious of you. As always, great to have you on the show. And Hank Spies is from the Spies Home Inspection Service here in Champaign-Urbana. And again, third Monday of the month at 10 o'clock, here to take your calls. Thanks so much, Hank.
Okay, thank you.
AM 580 thanks Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors for its support of Focus 580. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors offers pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors is pleased to support public radio in Central Illinois on behalf of its customers and business associates. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from Strawberry Fields in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields Catering Department now offers boxed lunches for professional meetings or casual lunchtime gatherings. Strawberry Fields, 328-1655.
That's it for this hour of Focus 580. When we return in just about 10 minutes, we will have an archive interview with Susan Thistlewaite. She's president of the Chicago Theological Seminary, and she was in town a couple of years ago. We did this interview talking about differing without demonizing and Christian conflict resolution. The subject is because so much conflict in this world is seemingly connected to religion. How do we go about dealing with those conflicts without demonizing people for their religious faith? That's an archive interview again, so alas, we cannot take your calls during the next hour of Focus 580, but hope you enjoy the show just the same. First, we'll take a break for some news and a market update.